This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks and a move. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 170. Well, just ahead, how Chesapeake Energy is riding the energy wave of high gas prices and dumping its oil assets. And in last week's show, we heard from Coupa Software, the CEO, hinting at a strong quarter. Well, now they've delivered, and how? We're going to hear from the Coupa CEO again. And we're going to look into the world of artificial intelligence in conversation. We're going to talk to the guest, the CEO of SoundHound. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And it's easier to catch this show if you just look at your phone and push the subscribe button or the follow button. If you follow us, if you subscribe, if you make us one of your favorites, the very latest show will show up on your phone. You can listen to every single episode of The Drill Down.
And The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to The Drill Down. We're going to talk about some business stories behind some stocks that are on the move. To help me do that is executive producer Isaac Webster. Isaac, how are you?
Corey, I'm great.
How are you?
I was about to ask you about the heat wave. It's pretty hot. It's very hot for LA. It's, you know, we've been reaching 100 a few times, which is not
even where you are,
what we're used to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and if I were to describe where you were and I told you it was Culver City, it's not, but it's kind of close.
I'm literally next door to Culver City, like one block away from the divide. Los Angeles proper, but Culver City adjacent.
But it's cooking. Yeah. I'll tell you, up here in San Francisco, honestly, it's been kind of nice. I hate to say it because I talked to a buddy in Sacramento yesterday where it was 116. San Francisco's been kind of mid-80s and kind of nice.
Yeah, I was talking to some people that were in town from Arizona, and they were like, look, this is nothing. This is cool for us. We're used to 115 temps, and like they were describing their lifestyle. You know, everything has to be indoors in the summer, putting shoes on their dogs to walk, frying eggs on the on the sidewalk.
Yeah, they could probably still use a stove for that. I would recommend that. If you're listening to this podcast right now, don't eat shit off the street.
Please don't. Please don't do it. Unless you cook it, unless you boil it first, right? Just boil it first.
No.
Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Let's go back to Coupa Software. Our guest on the show just last week was the CEO of Coupa Software.
That's right. Coupa trades under Coup, C-O-U-P, and shares have risen over 10%. In a week. We're going to get to that in a second, but they have had a rough 12 months. Coupa shares have dropped 75% over the past 12 months.
Yeah, safe to say expectations for this company are not what they were a year ago. But, you heard it on the podcast last week. If you listened to last week's show, the company makes business spending management software. They basically help companies spend less on the stuff they're going to buy. And their revenues continue to rise, and they reported a quarter, I think, that Rob Bernstein, the CEO, hinted at on our podcast last week. Sure enough, they had a pretty nice quarter based, again, on lowered expectations because they had such a kind of crummy guidance the quarter before. But revenues were up 18% to $211 million, which includes some acquisitions there, earnings down. They also announced a $100 million stock buyback. By point of context, it's a $4.2 billion company, but $100 million to buy back stock can start to make a difference. Now, as you mentioned, it's damn me with faint praise. These guys had used to, you know, regularly have revenue growth of 40% quarter over quarter. Now they're guiding at kind of 18%. They reported in the numbers that came out with the quarterly earnings this week. They're guiding at 15% for next year. So a lot slower growth than what they've had in the past. Nonetheless, a little bit stronger, I think, than some of the doubters might have expected from this company. And interestingly, they're saying it really doesn't have to do with what I've seen. Isaac, you and I talked about this on the phone earlier this week. The traffic's back a little bit here after Labor Day.
Right.
People are being asked to go back to the office and are doing so. And people returning to their physical offices. You know, Coop is saying it's a tailwind. Here's CEO Rob Bernstein.
I wouldn't say so much that there's a due to the fact that more folks are physically in offices that that's provided tailwind for us. But I think the fact that folks are more engaged in transformational projects through the use of technology has been a tailwind. And I think that, you know, can be correlated pretty well with a very strong North America enterprise business we saw this past quarter, with a scalable mid-market business we continue to drive. So I think it's more of the re-engagement, whether it's physical or not, kind of post-COVID. I think that's more correlated. And then definitely nothing overly significant in this quarter in a sort of product-by-product kind of mix. There are quarters where we see supplier risk being at the front end of the driver. We see quarters where the travel component of our travel T&E offering is seeing some greater pull, but nothing that I'd call and say, well, this module really drove the suite sales. It continues to be the vision lock we have with our customers around where, you know, BSM is going and their confidence in us being able to take them there.
So to me, that sounded, Isaac, like a little bit more positive tone than we hear from some other companies in the enterprise software world. But again, this is on much lowered expectations. These guys doing okay.
Yeah, and we got hints of what we saw this week from our conversation last week. So
yeah, I never recommend that people use this show for investment advice. But if you did, in fact, listen to what he said and went out and bought the stock, you got a nice little bump up today.
Yeah, you would have known what was happening.
Results reported this week.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Chesapeake Energy, the giant oil and gas company.
Chesapeake. We haven't talked about Chesapeake in a while. Trades under CHK. Shares have risen 63% in a year. Currently trading around $98 a share, just barely below their 52-week high of $105 a share.
God, I wish my portfolio was up 63% this year. It's not. these guys reporting some interesting news. Chesapeake, of course, famous for taking on a lot of debt and gobbling up, you know, back in the early 2000s, lots and lots of natural gas fields, but also some oil-rich fields. And Chesapeake is now with natural gas at, you know, $10 right now, the highest in 14 years. They're now saying, okay, we're getting out of the oil business. Gas is a great business for us. And so they're going into the Eagle Ford Shale, one of the hottest oil-producing regions in the U.S., in the world, really, in Texas. And they're going to sell their net acreage there. And net acreage is important because they own pieces of other facilities. But all in all, it's 610,000 acres out there in the Eagle Ford. They should get billions of dollars for this. And they've announced a plan to sell this with an auction process. It's starting this week. And so they're going to focus on and get out of the Eagle Ford, which is more oil heavy, as I like to say in that business. So, you know, you stick a hole in the ground, something comes out. And it might be gas and it might be oil. And you probably know before it comes out what it's going to be, but it might be a mixture thereof. And Eagle Ford is more gas light, oil heavy. They're going to focus more on the Haynesville Shale in Louisiana. And I think Haynesville actually extends all the way to parts of eastern Texas. Mount Vernon and areas of kind of in the Shreveport area, but Haynesville more gas heavy. The Marcellus Shale in western Pennsylvania. Importantly, the Marcellus Shale goes into New York State, but New York State won't allow fracking, so the oil and the gas won't come out of there. But gas heavy up there in the Marcellus Shale. in Pennsylvania. They're going to focus on that, and they're going to get out of the oil fields in the Eagle Ford Shale. Here at an analyst event is Dominic Dell'Osso, the CEO of Chesapeake. And I think what's interesting here in these comments is he doesn't think that gas is going to stay at $10 per BCF. But he does think that there is a meaningful change because of what's happening in the war in Ukraine and the interest in liquid natural gas, that there's a market there where there didn't used to be, and that natural gas isn't going to go back to that seemingly forever price of $2 per BCF that it was set at for so long. He thinks those days are gone and gone for good. Here's the CEO of Chesapeake.
Our view of natural gas prices has elevated quite a bit over the last 18 months, along with the rest of the market. We've seen the floor come up. We've seen a couple of things that have been really interesting, primarily the fact that coal just is not providing the relief valve as natural gas prices have gone up, especially this summer. And that gives us a lot of confidence around how we think about long-term gas prices. We know the demand will be resilient. We know that the world is short energy. And within being short energy is very short natural gas in the near term. The fact that we have a lot more LNG export out of the United States today is a great thing for the world. We can deliver more energy that is affordable, is reliable, and is lower carbon to the places in the world that it's needed. We can help to offset the effects of a devastating war in Europe. And we can do so with a commodity, again, that is accretive to the world's climate goals. So we think natural gas prices, you know, I was kind of joking on the greater than 10. I'd love for it to be greater than 10. In some respects, in some ways, there's absolutely no reason for it to be that high. There's plenty of gas in the United States and around the world to be able to deliver to markets that need it. And so, you know, I think you guys in the room landed on somewhere around $3 to $5 for the long-term gas price. I can't quibble with that. It could be $3.50, it could be $4. All of those prices make sense to us. And so, when we look at the curve today, we do see it much higher than that in the prompt months, and that makes for great revenue receipts. But our expectation is that it does moderate around the way that the curve is backwardated. We think that's logical. But the floor is so much higher than it's been, and that's really constructive and bullish for the industry, but especially for us as a company.
So, Isaac, I guess if you think you can set what they call a deck, if you can set a floor at $3.50, $4, and you think you can still make money there, that's the future for this business.
Yeah, he seems to think it's the future for the world energy markets too. Corey, what is your next drill down?
I want to take a look at HubSpot, that Boston technology, well, giants, not quite right, but HubSpot.
HubSpot trades under HUBS, Hubs, and shares have tumbled 14% in a week and have dropped 57% over the past 12 months.
So HubSpot. Is a company. HubSpot's a different company than it used to be. So it's about a $14 billion company in terms of market cap right now. Enterprise value also right there, about $13.5 billion with, you know, a little bit of debt and about $700 million in debt and some cash, of course. So this was a company that made marketing software. Essentially, they made some websites. There was a hilarious book. Strongly recommend this book by Dan Lyons called Disrupted. And Dan Lyons, former print journalist, famously the fake Steve Jobs. He had a fake Steve Jobs Twitter account for a while. Dan went to work for this company, HubSpot, and found them to be just a hot mess and ridiculous and self-impressed and selling kind of garbage, at least according to Dan's telling of the tale, to unwary customers, and talked about what a hot mess it was inside of this company and how much he struggled as a very, very clever and smart journalist in a world of very unclever people who are completely focused on selling whatever they could to customers and telling them it could do whatever they wanted to imagine it would do. The company's changed a lot, HubSpot has, and it has a different management. It is also getting on without Dan Lyons perfectly well. Thank you very much.
How many years have passed since Dan was there?
I'm going to call it a decade.
Okay.
Disrupted again, just absolutely a riot, and it just throws cold water on a lot of
the
these
book
things.
By Dan Lyons.
Yes, the book Disrupted by Dan Lyons. I'm looking at the paperback came out in 2017, so maybe not that long ago. But in any case, it is what Newsweek called "laugh out loud funny." Who writes reviews like that? Isn't that ridiculous?
Book review journalists, I guess.
Who want to get clips in the back of books. In any case, this business ambled around with different things around the world of marketing, and what they finally figured out was that there was a world for CRM software, the stuff that Salesforce has built a giant business on.
What does CRM mean again? CRM?
Customer Relationship Management. Thank you. Customer Relationship Management. Basically, software that lets you not only keep all of the data about your customers, their name, their phone number, their company, their assistant's name, what kind of flowers the assistant likes to get, whatever tools you need to understand your customer, but also lets you track the likelihood of a certain customer to buy, the things that you've done to increase that likelihood, and where you are in the process of getting that potential customer into being an actual customer and maybe even a growing customer. That's what CRM software does. And so, like I said, Salesforce has made a giant business out of this, as Siebel Systems once did a long time ago. These guys have come in and said, we're going to have CRM management software, CRM software at the center of our business, HubSpot that once basically remade websites for companies, but we're going to have it a lot cheaper. And and by being so much cheaper, we might not make as much money as Salesforce, but at least we'll have something. And so they've got trailing revenues of $1.5 billion. But what they've also seen is that their growth rate has really slowed down. And in this market of kind of cheap software, they've seen their growth rate, come way off. And that I think is reflected in the stock price. Nonetheless, their CEO, the current CEO, Yamini Rangan, I'm not suggesting she has any somewhere to go, but I'm saying she wasn't the CEO when Dan Lance wrote Disrupted, which was, as I mentioned, hilarious. The current CEO thinks that by having this really cheap software, it's more likely that customers use it just because it's easier to roll out across the organization because it doesn't cost as much to do so. The race to the bottom, HubSpot's on it. Here's the CEO talking about how that's working with their customers.
We have customers who are more digitally mature. They have legacy systems in place, and they're finding it really hard to get the return on investment and value from that. An example is Wirestorm. They are an AV signal distribution company, and they left behind a CRM legacy provider because the user licenses cost were expensive and was not effective for them, and they were not able to get the value out of that platform. Therefore, they consolidated on Marketing Hub, Sales Hub, and Service Hub with HubSpot. They were able to eliminate 5 point solutions. They were able to reduce their cost for CRM by 75%. And the best yet, they were able to increase their user adoption to 95%. That is really the holy grail for us. We want to be able to get the user adoption high. In this case, they were able to achieve that. So as you can see, we help customers scale across their digital journey with us. So what are our customers' challenges and priorities, and how are we uniquely positioned to be able to solve it?
So yeah, the pom-poms were out there, and the executives at HubSpot cheering for HubSpot to be expected from an analyst day. That's a soundbite from their analyst day just recently. But I think it does show kind of where they think they're going to find some growth and the ubiquitous nature of CRM software increasingly.
It feels like it's a very crowded field too.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why that race to the bottom of pricing, maybe not great news for Salesforce. All right, coming up next, we're going to look at artificial intelligence with SoundHound, very interesting company that's doing some interesting stuff around recognizing the things that people say and when they say them in an entirely new way. Keevan Mohajer joins us right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by BrainTrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. BrainTrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
Welcome back to the Drill Down Podcast. As promised, we are now joined right now by the CEO of SoundHound, Keevan Mohajer, joining us from Silicon Valley. And Keevan, glad to have you on. What is the product that SoundHound makes?
Thank you for having me. SoundHound is a leader in voice and conversational AI. My co-founders and I started the company in the Stanford dorm room 17 years ago, and we had this vision that within our lifetime, we can talk to computers, and they talk back to us, and you can have a conversation with them like in sci-fi movies, and we wanted to make that happen. So after 17 years, we built a platform that product creators can use to enable their device or their product, whether it's a service or a product, to talk to their users.
Now, I remember a company called SoundHound that would do sort of music discovery, where you would hum a tune and it would tell you what the song was, kind of like Shazam, except you didn't have to actually play the music. You could actually just play the part you remember.
Yes, that was us. And you know, some people thought that we pivoted from kind of a music space to voice AI space, but it's actually not how it happened. We started the company to be in voice AI, but we also, it was important to us to own the core tech because we wanted to be disruptive. We wanted to make it, you know, better than anything else out there. And we were also a bunch of scientists. I had a PhD in engineering from Stanford. So that turned out to be a long journey, just building all the components of voice AI, speech recognition, natural language understanding, and content domains, and cloud and edge. It took a long time. And it's not practical for a company to be a startup in R&D mode for 10 years. So we launched products along the way. And one of them was that humming search that, you know, it was still in voice. It was actually, you could speak the name of a song or artist. You could also hum a song. And then we added the recorded audio recognition. And that product became quite successful. In fact, it funded us for 10 years. So we didn't have to go raise a lot of money. And then in 2015, we announced our voice AI platform, which was actually the result of 10 years of stealth development.
I think the first I heard of your company was through a VC, Larry Marcus from Walden, who I think...
He's still on our board. After we became a public company, we are very fortunate that he chose to stay.
He's a drummer. What does he know about singing anything? He can't carry a tune.
Well, you know, he's a really good VC. I always say he finds these hidden gems that, you know, other people don't know and can't really tell, and he invests in them. He's a really good VC.
And he sticks with him a long time. I'm sure he's a wonderful singer. I mean, he's going to call me and yell at me when he hears this. So you guys have been, but you have been in this sort of unusual, very long period of development. Because you went public through a SPAC, you were able to say things about your future results that you normally couldn't do if you were doing a regular old IPO. And you've predicted just a ton of revenues. What I think it's $5 billion. Was it $1 billion in 5 years is what you had predicted?
Yes, I've lived in 5 years.
But you're nowhere near that yet.
You're not there yet, but we actually have a lot of strong foundation. So going public through a SPAC is not for everyone. It's definitely become more difficult these days, but it was the right thing for us because we have a lot of strong foundation. We have a lot of customers with multi-year contracts, with commitments, and you know, we have commitment in the hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts. That's the foundation that we were able to use to attract a lot of, you know, pipe investment as well. And the majority of our revenue will come from the existing customers in the next 2 years.
So I never do this, but since this is an audio-based company, I'm going to play a demo that you guys put out 7 years ago that gathered a lot of attention of sort of showing how SoundHound works.
What time is it in Tokyo?
It is 10:53 a.m. the next day in Tokyo.
What time is it in Tokyo when it's 2 p.m. in San Francisco, California?
It is 6 a.m. the next day in Tokyo when it is 2 p.m. in San Francisco, California.
When is the sun going to rise 2 days before Christmas of 2021 in Tokyo, Japan?
Sunrise in Tokyo, Japan will be at 6:47 a.m. on Thursday, December 23rd, 2021.
How many days are there between the day after tomorrow and 3 days before the second Thursday of November of 2022?
There are 2,714 days between the day after tomorrow and Monday, November 7th, 2022.
So that gets a little more and more bonkers. That's not faked?
No. That's a live product. It was live then, so people could go and try it, and it's gotten better. That was 7 years ago. And that actually is very core to our message, which is we wanted to make computers better than humans in language understanding. And if you think about it, computers are better than us in computing, but they're not always better than us in performing some tasks. Like, we used to beat them in chess and Go, but now they beat us in chess and Go. When it comes to language understanding, if you think about it, when you talk to other people, like a concierge in a hotel, you can ask them complex questions. But when you talk to third-party assistance, you lower your expectation and you talk in simple, short keyword-based questions.
Right,
and
right.
If you ask them, show me restaurants except Chinese, they always say, show you Chinese restaurants. And we wanted to change that. We wanted to make computers better than humans. We have a new technology that enables us to do really complex things, and
let me ask you about that. What's happening there with that? So that isn't just a voice to Google search and a voice response. Something else is happening there.
Yeah, everything is our tech. Everything is built in-house and evolved over the last 17 years. So we do speech recognition. We do natural language understanding. We also have aggregated content, either by gathering it ourselves or through partnerships. We serve that to the end user. We also provide that to our customers, like car companies, TV companies, and so on.
Yeah. So give me an example of a car company. I know Mercedes is a customer.
The ones we've announced are Mercedes, Honda, Kia, Genesis, Stellantis, that has a huge company in Europe with multiple brands,
sure.
Which was a merger of PSA and FCA, announced with Honda. We also, outside of automotive, power Vizio TVs, announced things with Qualcomm, Netflix, MasterCard.
Give me an example of how the product works in a car.
So there's an edge component, a cloud component. Historically, a lot of the voice recognition in the car is edge. That means there's no cloud, so it can only do simple things. We provide that, but we also have a cloud component where you can ask for weather and sports scores and stock prices and complex queries for restaurant search. So we have, complete assistance, and then the car companies can take that and customize it. They can add their own brand, their own wake word. They can bring their own domains, a car manual, and so on. And then what we've announced recently is that we're now bringing services that add value to the end user, but can also be monetized. Like while you're driving your car, you can order food, you can order coffee, you can find, parking and so on. So the end users find that convenient, but that generates leads for the restaurants and so on. And then we share that revenue with the car maker. So it kind of creates this flywheel effect.
So you've got a service component. It helps the car makers and their goals to not just be car sellers, but have a service revenue stream going forward. But you're selling the customer information.
We're not selling the customer information. The customers are choosing to engage with those services. So if you're driving your car, you can use your voice to control the air conditioning and the radio and navigation, and then you can find a restaurant. And then you choose to place an order from a particular restaurant. And then you're engaging with that restaurant through our service. We've also enabled that restaurant to accept voice ordering. So it's all initiated by the user.
Interesting. The demo I just played is 7 years old. Some of these deals have been on for a long time, yet the revenue is just barely ramping right now. Well, explain that to me, because your bookings exceed your revenue by like 100x or by 50x, I should say.
Yeah, that's the nature of the first pillar of our revenue. So we've identified three pillars. The first one is enabling devices and cars. And the nature of it is that it takes, from the moment you have a first meeting until you scale in production, it might take several years. So it required the patience, but we've gone through it and we had the funding to do that and globalize. But then the second and third pillar that we've introduced, which is services, those can be a lot faster, like voice enabling food ordering for restaurants. From the first meeting to enabling to going live can be a matter of days. So going forward, you will see a much bigger ramp in revenue in the second and third pillar. But the first pillar, which is the massive booking, those are already contracted and they're already scaling.
Now, you use the word AI. What is happening there that is AI?
Well, there are different ways to define AI. I think, anytime a computer, acts like a human. A lot of people choose that as the definition. But then there's a generic AI that, the computer has consciousness and can think for itself and so on. And I don't think anybody's there yet. Obviously, a lot of people are working on it. We are aiming to, disrupt that. But, basically you're as if you're talking to a human, you have a conversation with them, that's AI.
And on the back end, how is this happening? Is this out in the Amazon cloud or web services or something, are all the queries being done in-house in Silicon Valley? How does that all work?
So all the tech is ours. So we don't
any third party. Over 100 patents and so on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But for hosting, because we are an older company, we learned how to have our own data centers. So we have that. But we obviously, for scaling, third-party clouds are you know, it's kind of the way to go. And we announced a partnership with Oracle Cloud, so you're scaling with them globally.
You and TikTok, you're right there.
Yeah, there are others. There are others, and the quality of the cloud was very good. And you know, we did our due diligence, and that's what we chose.
It's an interesting business, and it you know, I think we've all started to have these interactions with voice. You know, this has been something computing has been talking about, as you say. You saw science fiction movies, and people been working in this field for decades. But it does seem to have really taken off with Siri and with all the smart speakers people use, and people listening to this program right now, listening to our podcast on Amazon Alexa and so on. But what I think what's happening with you guys, gets lumped into the same kind of thing, and it's a very different experience.
Yeah, I think the way I think about it, first, people are adopting voice and sometimes demanding it. That's great. So sometimes technologies are ahead of their time. And I was worried about that until a few years ago, that are we ahead of our time? But we are so fortunate that people are adopting it and demanding it. But still, the voice AI space is early. And I think of it as when there were smartphones before iPhone. iPhone was not the first smartphone. There were like so many smartphone players, and the people were adopting it. But then iPhone was just so much better that it disrupted it, and it kind of created new use cases and also eliminated all the other players. And I think we are at that moment where people are adopting voice AI, so that's good, but they're using it for simple things like asking for weather or setting an alarm or playing music. We don't adopt them for everything, and I think there is room for a player to disrupt that, and we would love to be that.
One interesting company, and one we can watch a little more clearly now that you're public, and we're grateful for your time. Keyvan Mohajer is the CEO of SoundHound.
Thank you for having me.
All right, well, coming up next on the Drill Down, of course, the Drill Down Byte, one number that you can listen to, and it'll tell you a whole lot about SoundHound right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you don't need SoundHound to listen to our show on your smart speaker. You can just ask your smart speaker to play the Drill Down podcast and hear our latest show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod, and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
Now we're back with a bite, the one number that tells us a whole lot. Well, I talked about their patents. These guys have applied for a bunch of patents. They've been granted a bunch of patents. Isaac, here's the number of how many patents they have. They have 81 patents, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
And have applied for another 146.
So they're just getting started.
Well, I think, that's been the story of this company for a very long time. As a private, it was just never getting out of the gates with revenue. But now they've finally got some revenue coming in, and they're finally getting some of these deals launched. It is very interesting that they're able to predict, $1 billion ramp of, from very measly revenues at this point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Drill Down Podcast. We're grateful for your time. I'm Corey Johnson. Isaac Webster's our executive producer. This sound is cleaned up and fixed and beautified by our editor extraordinaire, Ben. Thank you.
Our personal sound hound.
Our own sound hound. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network.